Taliban groups in Pakistan and Afghanistan yesterday staged simultaneous attacks in both countries, killing at least 100 people. A women's clothing market was targeted in Peshawar, while across the border, UN officials were attacked in their hotels in Kabul. The Pakistan attacks came just hours after U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton arrived in the nation. While Taliban groups in both countries have their ethnicity and fundamentalist beliefs in common, the Pakistani version has apparently shown less concern for civilian casualties than the Afghan Taliban. Their reasons for the attack were also distinct. The Peshawar attack is thought to have been in direct response to a recent deployment of 30,000 Pakistani troops to South Waziristan, where the group is based. The Kabul attack, on the other hand, was claimed by the Afghan Taliban to be in response to the UN's recent role in setting up presidential runoff elections scheduled for November 7th. With the United States reviewing its strategy on the Afghanistan war and expanding its war in Pakistan, a crucial question is whether U.S. actions are curbing or creating the problems in both countries. This week's New York Times revelation of the suspected drug lord brother of Afghan President Karzai being on the CIA payroll to run paramilitaries further complicates the situation. My guest is Vijay Prashad, the George and Martha Kellner Chair in South Asian History and Professor of International Studies at Trinity College, author of nearly a dozen books, his latest called The Darker Nations, A People's History of the Third World, and keynote speaker for next weekend's South Asian Network annual dinner. So, Vijay, with all of this this news coming out of the Pakistan-Afghanistan area and with the president reviewing his strategy, what do you make of this question, whether the U.S. is curbing or creating these problems?
Well, it's obviously a little bit of both, depending on where you're standing. It's creating the problem, certainly in terms of creating more desperation for people. Winter is approaching. The United States has pressured the Pakistani military to enter the border regions and conduct these campaigns. The campaign in South Waziristan has essentially locked down the whole area. You have tens of thousands of civilians who are trying to escape. It appears that there's no roadmap for them. They don't know. They have not been informed about how they should get out of the way. Even Human Rights Watch, which has been quite quiet on the AFPAC events, recently came out and said that the campaign in South Waziristan has been conducted, you know, without whatever it is, the adequate propriety. So certainly the attack in Peshawar is a direct result of the pressure that the United States has put on the Pakistani military to go into areas like Waziristan. The attack in Kabul, I think, may be related but slightly different in that, you know, this is another game, which is that the United States has consistently wanted a fig leaf democracy in the countries where, you know, where there is occupation, whether it's Iraq or Afghanistan, and pushing this democracy on the first instance produces its contradictions. So you want your man to be in power, but if somebody challenges your man and then there's a stolen election, you know, what does one do? You know, the attack that came on the United Nations compound obviously had everything to do with the election, you know, push to do a re-election. And there, I think the United States is to some extent creating instability. On the other hand, they are also a victim of forces that they have no idea how to deal with. So I think in Afghanistan, the United States is completely clueless about what's going on. And this is brought out by every indication that within the White House there is a desperation to find a strategy, and they're unable to do so. In Pakistan, things are much clearer, and unfortunately, the clarity is going to create a far greater bloodshed than we have seen so far.
Let's focus on Pakistan for a moment. In Afghanistan, the Taliban is being characterized as sort of a nationalist organization. But in Pakistan, what exactly is the Pakistani Taliban's goal? Is it to simply take over the government and institute Sharia law?
I mean, it's not just that. There are a number of factors at play. One of them, certainly, is that the Pakistani people, since the 1970s, have really not enjoyed any of the fruits of Pakistan's wealth and ability to provide well-being. I mean, the ordinary people have been run ragged in the last 30 years as the elites have, gained a great deal of funds from the United States, from the Saudis and others. The elites have been doing fine. The ordinary people have been pushed against the millstone. So that's one thing to keep in mind there. The second thing to keep in mind is that in that same 1970s period, the Pakistani government, at that time a military dictatorship, began to Islamize the state and to push Islamization in civil society. So many people who were not being able to eat bread had to turn to Islamic charities in other places, and as a result, their ideological framework had been substantially Islamized. So they want to see further Islamization of the state. In other words, the state said, Islamize. They Islamized, and now they're turning back and saying, well, why don't we go further? The third thing that's there, I think, that's very important is that substantial sections of the population are deeply anti-American. And since 9/11, since the bargain that President, Chief Executive Officer Musharraf, the bargain that Musharraf had created after 9/11 with the United States has created a great deal of rising animosity against the state from the population. Now, just take into consideration the border regions. In the elections a few years ago, the Islamist parties were all roundly defeated, and a secular party came to power in the border regions. Now, instead of reviving the political process in the border, instead of having a mass campaign against brutality, the state just sort of sat back and started to make deals with the Islamist forces once again. I mean, this is like a situation of constant blowback. The reason the state is unable to do a mass campaign on behalf of another kind of platform is that then they would have to question how the elites have been living and how the rest of the population has been suffering. And they are unwilling to do that. It's much easier to play this devious game with the Islamists. They are like a pressure cooker. They're playing this game, and unfortunately this game increasingly is coming to bite the elites, who are now turning around and saying the only savior for Pakistan is military intervention by the U.S. And I think this is a great, it is to the absolute discredit of the Pakistani elite that they want to now take cover behind American military forces when they should be questioning the very basis of the Pakistan state's commitment to its population.
I'm speaking with Vijay Prashad, the professor of international studies at Trinity College, author of several books, and he's going to be a keynote speaker at the South Asian Network's 8th annual fundraising dinner on Saturday, November 7th at 7 p.m. at the Town and Gown at University of Southern California. We'll give you information and more details about that event just after the interview. So, Vijay, let's bring up the role of the United States, and particularly as it moves from its current military policy and its policy over the last several years to increasingly relying on these unmanned drones to drop bombs, sort of like a remote control war, as some have called it, or even sort of video games with people's lives. How are those perceived on the ground? And is that, do you think, in the long term, actually going to make Americans less safe in terms of generating animosity?
Every week in Pakistan, there is a protest march against the drone attacks. And at those marches, the marches are met by the Pakistani police forces who try to close them down. They try to prevent the media from distributing images of these marches. These drone attacks are creating a great deal of anger among the population. It's very ironic that after the suicide bomb blast or the car bomb blast, whatever it turns out to be in Peshawar, which killed 100 people, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, with a very, I think, strong, intonation, said that these bomb attacks are an act of cowardice. Well, to the Pakistani population, it seems rather ironic to have the American Secretary of State say that a car bomb or a suicide attack is cowardice, when the United States is using unmanned drones at 30,000 feet, dropping bombs at targets where there are large numbers of civilians. I mean, who is the coward here, and what does cowardice mean in this conflict? So, you know, there is a great deal of anger at this. In fact, the international bodies, human rights organizations have started to question whether utilization of drones for so-called targeted assassinations are indeed legal. I mean, there is a question of this being illegal on international law terms, and also it raises questions based on American executive position, whether it's legal for an American president to sanction an assassination, an extrajudicial assassination, which is indeed what these drones have been doing. So, I mean, there is a great deal of anger. This is not the solution. Unfortunately, what's beginning to happen in the Democratic Party is that Vice President Joe Biden is being increasingly seen as the so-called dove in the administration, arguing for less escalation. But what people are not pointing out is that Biden is not taking a pacifist position. Biden is saying, instead of sending, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 more troops, let's increase the drone attacks. Indeed, people around him have said, let us now bring the drones into Balochistan, into Peshawar, where Mullah Omar is supposed to be hiding. So this is a very dangerous debate, if this is indeed the debate in the White House, between sending troops on the ground or escalating drone attacks. Neither of these are a good possibility for Pakistan.
Vijay, I want to broaden the conversation around regional issues. While much of the action, if you will, sorry to use that euphemism, is seen in Pakistan and Afghanistan, there's also the role of India in regional politics there that influences not only the actions of the Pakistani and Afghan governments, but also the Taliban and some of the opposition forces and the United States. What is the role of India in all of this? Is it just sort of a passive partner, or is it actually more active than people think?
Oh, it's very active. I mean, this is a very difficult knot, which is why I believe that a regional solution is the only solution. India and Pakistan have played a proxy engagement in Afghanistan since the 80s. India had backed the Najibullah government in the late 1980s after the Soviet withdrawal. Pakistan then pushes the Taliban forward as a counter to Najibullah. When Najibullah is killed in 92, India begins to support some elements that will become later the Northern Alliance. This is a tussle between India and Pakistan. It's no surprise, for instance, that the Indian embassy has twice been targeted in Kabul in the last couple of years, most recently this last month. So there is a battle. Pakistani military, in a kind of, its strategic assessment, doesn't want to be flanked on two sides by pro-Indian governments. In other words, one side India, one side a pro-Indian government in Kabul. That's one issue. Secondly, there is a long-standing issue that has been inherited from the British. By the way, it's remarkable that under the Bush regime, his person in charge of the Afghanistan theater didn't know about the Durand Line. Megan O'Sullivan was not familiar with the Durand Line, which cuts through between Afghanistan and Pakistan. It was created in 1893. It cuts through the region, the homeland of the Pashto speakers. This has been, since the 1950s, a bone of contention between Afghanistan and Pakistan. Pakistan created in 1947. In the 1950s, in fact, there were border engagements between Pakistan and Afghanistan. They fought on the border a few times, minor skirmishes over the Durand Line. So India, Pakistan, Afghanistan have all played this Durand Line against each other. Pakistan genuinely fears, especially after 1971, having lost a large part of the country which became Bangladesh, where there's been an unstoppable insurgency in Balochistan. If Pakistan were to lose Balochistan, to lose large sections of the north to Afghanistan, Afghanistan claiming substantial parts of Pakistan as its territory. So Pakistan feels extremely vulnerable given this instability on the Durand Line, given India's relationship with Kabul. So that vulnerability also produces this kind of strategic obligation for Pakistan to continue to support elements that will create instability in Afghanistan. That's why I believe that it's imperative that there be some kind of regional dialogue between Iran, India, Pakistan, Kabul, different factions in Kabul. It's not just an Afghan problem. It's a regional problem. It needs to be sorted out regionally. I mean, some modus vivendi has to be created between Afghanistan and Pakistan on the border. There is no well-defined border, certainly, and maybe there should not be one because people who live in that region cross back and forth. But some thinking has to come on the table about these issues on a regional platform. The United States cannot be a player in this dialogue because it has too much bad blood involved in all sides.
Vijay Prashad is my guest. He is a professor of international studies at Trinity College, author of nearly a dozen books. He's going to be the keynote speaker at the South Asian Network's 8th Annual Fundraising Dinner, Saturday, November 7th at 7 p.m. at USC. Final question, Vijay. When you think, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, how do you think, as a historian who's written about the history of, peoples of the so-called Third World, how do you think all of this is going to be viewed, particularly with respect to the United States' role and ex-colonial countries' roles in terms of not just the drone attacks, but these ongoing games with people's lives, and also the rhetoric coming from many parts of the U.S. government that talks about the people of Afghanistan and Pakistan in very patronizing roles, wanting to liberate them, etc.?
Well, it is remarkable because 20 years ago when I was active, involved in some of the stuff around the Afghan war, we used to say things like, this is going to come back to bite the United States. After 9/11, Ward Churchill said that and he lost his job. Just a few months ago, in April of 2009, Secretary of State Clinton was on the Hill, and she said in a very straightforward statement, she said that we created the Mujahideen, and she said, I'm going to quote her because this I'll never forget, she said, let's be careful with what we sow because we will harvest it. You know, this is Hillary Clinton speaking in April 2009 on the Hill. Let's be careful with what we sow. She was referring to the help the United States gave to the Mujahideen, where it took elements, the most misogynist elements, Ahmad Shah Massoud, a hero to the French perhaps, but certainly not to Afghan women studying engineering in the 1970s in Kabul, people like Gulbuddin Hikmatyar, took them from relative obscurity in the 70s, funded them to the hilt, allowed them to form armies, and then Gulbuddin Hikmatyar now is a great enemy of the United States. So, that was then, this is now. This is now what will be, I'm not sure. At moments like this, I would like to start quoting the ancient Sanskrit shlokas about how time is endless and there is no backwards and forwards. There is only the present.
Vijay Prashad, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you in Los Angeles, November 7th. Thanks.
Great. Thank you.
Vijay Prashad is the George and Martha Kellner Chair in South Asian History and Professor of International Studies at Trinity College, author of nearly a dozen books, including his latest, The Darker Nations, A People's History of the Third World. He's going to be the keynote speaker at the South Asian Network's 8th Annual Fundraising Dinner, Saturday, November 7th at 7 p.m. It's happening at the USC Town and Gown Ballroom, and the event will be hosted by poet and artist D'Lo. For tickets, you can call Dolly Hussein at 562-403-0488. That's 562-403-0488. Or you can email her at dolly@southasiannetwork.org. Details are also all on their website at southasiannetwork.org. And we'll link to it from our site later today at kpfk.org/uprising.